Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When did instant karma crush someone's ego in the most public way possible? Story 1. I busk most Saturdays on the pedestrian street, a battered sax, an amp the size of a shoebox, and a sign that says, "Requests welcome." Around noon, an influencer in neon athleisure parked herself in front of me and started filming. POV, a grown man begging for coins instead of getting a real job, she said, loud enough to cut through a Coltrane line. She kicked my open case so bills fluttered across the bricks. People stopped. Phones came out. My stomach fell. Before I could say anything, a guy in a faded ball cap stepped between us. "Ma'am," he said, flashing a badge from a lanyard under his hoodie. "City street use." Turns out he was one of the plainclothes officers who check permits and crowd issues. He'd been listening to me for 20 minutes. "You just interfered with a licensed performer and created a hazard," he said, pointing at the cash scattered near strollers and bikes. "That's a citation," she laughed. "You can't give me a ticket on my live," she said, spinning the phone on him. The chat exploded with skull emojis and L-plus ratio. The officer calmly asked for her ID. She refused, still narrating like this was content. He radioed. Another officer stepped up. The neon lady's smile faltered when the printer in his pouch started buzzing and he peeled off a fat slip. "Municipal code, 42.20. Interference, littering, and failure to comply," he read. "You're also responsible for picking up every bill you knocked out of that case." She crouched, still filming, trying to make it a bit. A little girl toddled over and plopped a crumpled dollar back into my case. That broke the spell. Strangers formed a semicircle, dropping fives and tens while she crawled around the bricks, grabbing singles under benches. Her live chat turned on her. "Just apologize. You look ridiculous." Someone recognized her brand and said, "Didn't you do a Be Kind campaign last month? I started a new tune. Another One Bites the Dust." Couldn't resist, and the whole crowd chuckled. The officer returned her ID and said, "You're free to go when you've restored all property." She finally mumbled, "Sorry," without looking up. When she scurried off, my case was heavier than it had ever been. I'd made rent in an hour, and the only thing I'd done was hold a note while Karma tuned her mic. Story 2. We'd flown 2 states to pitch the biggest client our little software firm had ever courted. I was the quiet project manager. Brett was the peacock salesperson with the gelled hair and watch the size of a pie. He swaggered into the conference room like he owned the glass. "Don't worry," he whispered to me. "I'll carry this." He then told the room, CIO, VP of Ops, a dozen engineers, that our product could replace 3 of their teams, and even a junior could deploy it. I watched our engineers shrink. When my turn came to demo, Brett clapped his hands. "Let me do the fun part," he said, grabbing the HDMI cable from me. He wanted to show how idiot-proof it is. He clicked the wrong icon. Instead of the demo, his desktop splashed across the 120-inch screen. Slack was open. The top message was bold with unread. number sales champs, period. The newest DM was already centered from the preview pane, big and unforgiving. From Brett to a colleague, these clowns don't even know what they need. I'll sell them the deluxe and they'll thank me while we gut their team. The PM is dead weight. Watch me talk circles around their dinosaur CIO. There was a breath in the room you could set your watch to. The CIO, a woman who had been polite but reserved, slowly turned to Brett. Got our team? She repeated. Brett panicked, scrambled for the trackpad, and in his frenzy clicked a meme he'd saved. Something with the company's logo photoshopped onto a sinking ship. It filled the screen like a billboard. He unplugged the cable. Too late. The VP closed her notebook. We value partners who respect our people, she said. She stood. Half the room followed. The CIO looked at me and the engineers and said, You may be fine people, but we're passing. As they left, my boss leaned into Brett's ear with a smile that wasn't a smile. Hand me your badge, he said softly. You can expense your flight home if HR approves it. In the hallway, a pair of junior engineers who'd been replaceable walked by. One of them saluted Brett with two fingers and said, Even a junior, huh? We flew home with an empty pipeline and a lighter carry-on. One ego removed at the gate. Story 3. My niece plays on a U16 team where the dads act like the World Cup is on layaway. The worst of them is Dave. Mirrored shades, folding throne, a voice like a megaphone without the battery cap. He rides the refs constantly. At the regional semifinal, he started before warm-ups were over. Hey, Stripes, you ever read a rule book? He bellowed at a teenage linesman who probably still had algebra homework. 5 minutes in, Dave exploded over an offside call. He stomped the sideline, clapping sarcastically inches from the kid's face. The crowd shifted, embarrassed. The head referee jogged over and warned him. Dave smirked and thumbed his lanyard. I'm a coach in this league, he announced, loud. I know the rules better than you. That's when the tournament director, think elementary school principal with a clipboard, appeared like a storm cloud. Coach, what club? He asked. United, Dave said. Your badge? Dave puffed his chest and displayed his laminated card like a sheriff's star. The director took it, scanned the QR, and frowned. This expired last season, he said. He turned to the ref crew. Persistent harassment, misrepresentation. Dave tried to wave it off, but the director was already motioning to the bench. He explained to our coach that league policy docked the team a goal for adult misconduct. Repeat offenses could forfeit the match, and the responsible adult would be removed from the facility. The other sideline cheered. Dave went red. You can't penalize the kids because, he started, but two security volunteers flanked him and pointed toward the parking lot. The scoreboard operator tapped minus one. Our girls, who had been grinding, watched their lead evaporate like a bad magic trick. And then Karma put on cleats. 30 seconds later, with the field quiet for once, our midfielder threaded the cleanest through ball of the season. Their keeper hesitated. Our striker buried it. The whole complex erupted, not just for the goal, but for the silence where Dave's voice used to be. As he trudged away, a mom called out, Thanks for knowing the rules, coach. The ref, still with acne and nerves, held his flag steady and smiled the smallest smile. My niece said later the best part wasn't the win. It was seeing the kid in stripes walk off the pitch with his head high while a grown man learned what a whistle actually does. Story 4. On the morning commute, the turnstiles were crabby. One had that sea agent light glowing like a bad mood. A guy in a designer tracksuit took it as a challenge. He planted himself in front of the jammed gate, made eye contact with the line, and vaulted the turnstile with a gymnast's flourish. Suckers, he announced, arms wide like he'd just invented gravity. People rolled their eyes, but he wasn't done. He started filming himself, panning over faces. Another day paying for the privilege of being poor, he narrated. Couldn't be me. Two transit employees were at the far end dealing with a stroller. The tracksuit guy sauntered toward the platform, still doing his little TED talk about victimless crimes and taxation is theft. A chime sounded. Doors opened. He sprinted, shoved past a woman with a cane, and dove into the car as the doors closing announcement began. Except the doors didn't close. They reopened. A pair of plain clothes fare inspectors stepped into the car with him, holding up badges. One of them pointed to the camera. "You can keep that rolling," she said, "for evidence." He grinned like he was about to debate. "Do you know who I am?" he asked. "No," she said, "but your face and this station name are clear." He tried to shoulder past them. The other inspector tapped the intercom. "Operator, hold," he said. The operator held. The platform filled with gawkers. Tracksuit kept talking, louder now, about rights. The inspector gestured to the emergency egress swing gate next to the broken turnstile. It had a big red sign. "For ADA and emergency use only. Fare required." A camera right above it blinked a tiny green LED. They printed a citation. "Fare evasion plus interference and endangering a mobility passenger." The woman with the cane stepped forward and, to a round of murmurs, lightly tapped him on the shin with the cane he'd shoved past. "Watch your manners," she said. As they escorted him out, he yanked his arm, tripped over the gap, and windmilled onto the platform. No blood, just dignity on the rails. Someone in the car started a slow clap that spread like a wave as the inspectors guided him back to the booth, right by the donation jar.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Are for reduced fare riders. When the doors finally closed, the operator's voice came over the speaker. "Thanks for your patience, folks." The whole train exhaled. "I've never seen a platform look so much like a courtroom." Story 5. Our HOA president, Rick, loved rules the way cats love sunbeams. He measured lawns with a tape, photographed trash cans for documentation, and once fined a widow because her wind chimes were audibly festive. He opened the annual block party with a speech about standards, like he was reciting scripture. A city fire marshal had a booth that year, answering questions about brush clearance. Rick made a show of introducing him as proof our neighborhood was model compliant. Midway through the potluck, Rick spotted Mrs. Alvarez's tiny porch flag, a hand-sewn thing with sunflowers, and marched over with a citation pad. "Flags require architectural review," he intoned, loud enough for the cul-de-sac. People stopped scooping potato salad. Mrs. Alvarez, who's 82 and bakes for every baby shower, looked like she'd been slapped. Then Dan from two houses down cleared his throat. He flies a little hobby drone and had spent the last month filming roof lines for neighbors worried about embers after last season's fires. "Quick question, Rick," he called. "Did the board approve your new upper deck?" Rick smiled that politician's smile. "Of course," he said. "All my projects are by the book." Dan tapped his tablet and mirrored it to the fire marshal's portable monitor. Up popped a week-old video, Rick's second-story deck. Installed this spring with a neat row of potted palms pressed against a wood railing. The drone drifted, showing the deck ledger bolted into stucco with no visible flashing and a barbecue under an eave. The marshal leaned in. "Is that within 5 feet of combustible siding?" he asked. "And no spark arrester?" Rick sputtered. "That's private property," he said. The marshal straightened, pulled out a citation book I'd never seen at a barbecue, and walked with Dan and half the block to Rick's driveway. The marshal slapped a red notice of violation, unsafe structure, fire hazard tag to the deck post, the kind you can see from space. He explained very publicly that unpermitted work plus fire hazards meant fines and immediate cessation of use. Story 6. Our flight was delayed. The kind of delay that makes strangers form a single organism with snacks. The gate agent announced a rolling reboard by groups. That's when a man in a blazer the color of wet pennies bullied to the front, waving a metal card like a priest with incense. "Diamond Platinum Elite," he declared, shooing a dad with a stroller aside. "I pay your salary," he told the agent, loud enough for the echo. He started filming himself. POV? Watch how status works. The agent was a calm woman with a voice like felt. Sir, we haven't called your group yet. He laughed and flipped his phone to show a boarding pass. Front cabin, try to keep up. She scanned it. The pole printer chirped. Her eyebrows twitched. This is basic economy, she said, into the mic without looking at him so the whole half moon of the gate heard. No carry-on, Group 9, he blustered. Call your supervisor. She stepped aside and waved over a man in a vest with a manager badge. He didn't touch the phone pointed at his face. He looked at the line behind the man, at the wheelchair, the service dog, the elderly couple holding hands. Folks, the manager said into the PA, we'll take pre-board now. Passengers who need extra time, active duty, families with small children. A cheer rippled. The blazer tried to wedge past the wheelchair. The manager blocked him with a gentle palm. You'll board when Group 9 is called. The blazer doubled down. I know the CEO, he announced, still filming. The agent smiled. Wonderful, she said. He prefers we follow policy, she tapped her keyboard. Another slip printed. Also, you checked in late and changed seats. That bumps you to the last boarding zone. When Group 1 finally began, the man lunged again. The scanner lit red. The agent didn't raise her voice. Sir, we cannot accept your bag in the cabin. Basic economy. She tagged it for gate check and held it in her hands until he released it, like taking a toy from a toddler. Someone in line gently clapped once. Then again. The whole crescent joined in. Not mean, just tidy. As he trudged down last, the agent clicked the mic once more. We appreciate kindness, she said. It boards first. The dad with the stroller rolled past her and whispered, that was art, she shrugged. Policy, she said, and smiled as the jet bridge swallowed the world's smallest violin. Story 7. There's a guy at my gym who treats the bench press like a throne. Headphones around his neck so everyone can hear his playlist. Chalk on his palms like fairy dust. He'll hover over newbies, correcting form, always loud enough to carry. Monday night, he locked onto a college kid squatting a cautious 95. Bro, that's not weight, he scoffed, clapping once so chalk puffed. You're wasting the rack. Go do machines. Right then, our oldest member shuffled in. Eunice, 71, white bob, wrists like porcelain cups. She volunteers at the front desk sometimes, tiny and polite. She slid onto the platform next to Chad with the chalk and started warming up her deadlift with the bar. He chuckled. Careful, Grandma, he said, winking at his phone like it was an audience. Eunice added a plate, then another. Her breathing stayed slow, methodical. Chad went back to the college kid. You gotta get depth or it doesn't count. On Eunice's fourth set, she chalked lightly, set her grip, and pulled. Two plates aside floated. The gym slowed. She tapped the bar down. A trainer who knows everyone's numbers said, softly but not softly, that's 225. Chad swallowed and tried to reassert dominance. Nice for your age, he said. He loaded 275 on the bar and yanked like he was starting a lawnmower. The plates clanged and didn't leave the floor. He tried again. The veins in his neck wrote a novel. Nothing. Eunice waited until his panting stopped. Mind if I try? She asked. She stripped 10 aside, 265, tightened her belt, shoulders back, eyes on the middle distance, hips down, pull. The bar rose smooth as a sunrise. She locked out, smiled, and put it down like a secret. The front desk kid hit the PR bell. The whole room applauded the kind of applause you give a symphony. Chad laughed too loudly. I wasn't warmed up, he explained to no one. His phone, still propped to capture a lift that never happened, had been recording the entire scene. The trainer walked over to the whiteboard and wrote in big block letters, Eunice, 265, gym record, 70 plus. Then, under it, smaller, chalk policy, use less. Someone erased the words, for your age. Chad offered Eunice his spot on the bench. She waved it off and patted the college kid's shoulder. Take the rack, she said. We were all starting once, and for the first time all night, Chad's volume set itself to human. Story 8. Our town streams council meetings like a reality show nobody asked for. During public comment, a man with a trucker cap and a YouTube channel approached the mic to rant about bike people. "Freeloaders," he boomed, "clogging lanes we paid for with real registrations. They blow red lights, they don't stop, and they block traffic." He wagged a finger at the camera. "Real citizens drive." On the dais, the mayor looked worn out. The city engineer rotated a pen. My neighbor Lena, who bikes to her chef job at 5 a.m., folded her arms in the back row. The man kept going. "Enforce the law. Start with the one out front," he said, jabbing his thumb at the glass doors. "Bike racks taking up good parking. There's a lag in the stream, but the chamber has an overflow monitor that shows the lobby camera. On it, a silver pickup wedged into the red-painted curb labeled Fire Lane, No Stopping. The truck's bumper dipped over the fresh-painted bike stencil like a boot on a neck. And there, in the corner of the frame, a parking officer was riding on a pad with the patience of a bonsai gardener. Inside, the city engineer pressed a button on the console. The lobby feed filled the chamber screen. The man at the mic didn't look back right away. The room did. A murmur rolled. The ticket slid under the wiper. Then the officer took a photo, crouched, and added a second citation for blocking the bike lane. The camera picked up the license plate. It matched the vanity plate on the man's hat. He finally turned. His mouth opened, closed. That's entrapment," he said, "not a lawyer." The mayor leaned toward his mic. "Sir, enforcement is happening," he said, tone neutral as oatmeal. "As you requested." Lena let out a small, involuntary snort that became a laugh. The chamber joined her. It wasn't cruel. It was gravity. The man tried to pivot. "I meant other people," he said. But the officer had already set an orange cone behind the pickup and called a tow for the fire lane. The council moved on to the next item, expanding a protected bike lane by the elementary school. Motion carried 5-0, applause drowning the sound of a tow truck backing up outside. Story 9. Our school fundraiser turned the parking lot into a carnival with rigged games you rig for good. The most popular booth was the dunk tank, a blue throne above cold water where local celebrities took turns heckling kids for charity. When Coach Molly, who teaches math like it's a magic trick, climbed up in a goofy crown, a guy from the rival school swaggered over in a letterman jacket two sizes too small for his 40s. He started peacocking near the line. "No one's got an arm," he yelled. "Back in my day, we'd sink her in one throw." He took a microphone from the MC without asking. "Allow a professional," he boomed, flexing like a rental inflatable. He pointed at a kid with a crooked cap. "Move aside, champ," he said. The kid, small, 8, braces, stepped back, eyes big. Then he tossed his first ball. It missed the big red target by a zip code, hit the tarp roof, and smacked him on the shoulder on the way down. The crowd chuckled. He threw again, air ball. He looked at his wife like gravity had betrayed him. "The mechanism's off," he announced into the mic. Third throw, he hit the target dead center. Nothing happened. He grinned, arms up. "See?" he shouted. "Broken." The MC put a hand to his ear. "Judge's ruling," he said, milking it. "Thrower must stand behind the line." The guy had been stepping over by half a shoe. The crowd oohed. He overcorrected, stepped back, wound up like a cartoon, and sent the ball so wide it bounced into the cotton candy machine. The line kid with braces raised his hand shyly. "My turn?" The MC gave him the leftover ball. The braggart smirked and coughed into the mic. "Take notes, Junior." The kid rolled his shoulders, breathed, and side-armed with the kind of accuracy you only practice against your garage door. The ball smacked the center. The seat clamp released. Coach Molly dropped like a royal anchor into a splash that kissed the braggart's shoes. The place erupted. The MC hit replay on the portable screen like it was ESPN. The braggart's mic squealed and cut out. Water had reached it. Coach Molly popped up, crown askew, cackling. She pointed at the kid. "MVP!" she yelled. The PTA president marched over with a Sharpie and wrote the kid's name on the big dunkdom board, adding a star. As the braggart slunk away, shoes squeaking, the MC leaned into the mic. "Thank you for your donation," he said. and for the demonstration on sportsmanship, the line moved forward, a little taller. Story 10. Traffic Court is the world's least glamorous theater, where justice is mostly fluorescent. A parade of drivers pled, but there was no one there for rolling stop signs. Then came a guy in a bomber jacket who swaggered up like it was open mic night. "Your Honor," he said. "I'm a safe driver. The officer singled me out because I drive a performance car." He glanced back at the audience to make sure we'd absorbed the word performance. The judge, an older man with a voice like a metronome, skimmed the report. "Cited for 55 in a 25, in a school zone, during pickup." The guy said, "There were no kids." He smiled at the gallery. "Allies, surely." The prosecutor folded her hands. "Officer," she said. The officer didn't speak. He wheeled a little TV on a cart to the front like a time traveler from middle school. He plugged in a USB drive. On screen, dash cam. The guy's car, loud, low, entered frame. The speed overlay ticked up. The school's flashing sign blinked SLOW. Parents stood with coffees. Then, like a ghost of hubris, another rectangle popped up in the corner, a vertical video. The username matched the defendant's vanity plate. Caption, "Showing the haters what a cold start sounds like." Filmed from inside the same car, posted the same day, comments, fire emojis, and, "Bro, chill, it's a school," the gallery inhaled. The defendant blurted, "That's satire." The judge cocked an eyebrow. "Of what?" he asked. The officer paused the video on the moment where a crossing guard startled, hand on her chest. The judge removed his glasses. "Sir," he said, "the court is not a subscriber to your channel. He found him guilty. Fines, points, mandatory safety course." Then the judge did something unusual. He asked the crossing guard, seated in the back, if she had anything to add. She stood and said, "I hear engines like that in my sleep." The room, a mosaic of bored strangers, turned into a community for 10 seconds. As the man left, he tucked his phone face down. The camera that had loved him now, an unblinking witness against him. Outside in the hallway, a kid tugged his mom's sleeve and whispered, "Instant karma." The fluorescent lights hummed. Steady as gravity. Story 11. I work weekends at a little family bistro with an open kitchen and a single TV over the bar that usually shows the menu slideshow. A woman came in with a ring light and a friend carrying a tote that said, "Content." She ordered a salad, filmed every leaf, then halfway through gasped like she'd found a shark. She pinched a long dark hair between two nails and held it up for her phone. "This is disgusting," she announced, turning so the whole dining room could enjoy the show. People froze with forks midair. My boss, who's bald, came out from the line and apologized. She demanded the meal comped, and honestly, a gift card for the trauma. While she kept filming, I glanced at the pass and saw the ticket. It was me on cold station. I wear a cap, tucked hairnet, no loose strands. Something felt off. My boss asked if she'd mind us reviewing footage for training. She smirked at her camera. "Yes, let's teach them hygiene." He grabbed the remote, switched the bar TV from the menu to the security feed, and rewound the last 20 minutes. The screen filled with four angles. There she was, adjusting her ring light, lifting her hair to redo a messy bun, and calmly plucking a strand, palming it, then leaning over the plate. The room went quiet like someone had hit mute. She tried to pivot. "That could be anyone's." At the corner table, Officer Ruiz, regular, in uniform, mid-meatball sub, set down his sandwich and stood up. "Ma'am," he said, voice even. "Placing foreign objects to obtain free goods is fraud." He didn't cuff her. He didn't need to. The crowd was doing the handcuffs for him with their eyes. She gripped her tote. "This isn't fair," she said, still filming. My boss kept his tone surgical. "We're happy to comp your plate," he said. And then he pointed to the bottom of the screen where a date-time overlay matched her live stream. "But we'll also be keeping this file." Her friend's face went white. The ring light drooped. Someone at the bar started a slow clap that wasn't sarcastic, more like relief. Ruiz offered her a very official choice: pay and leave, or stay for a report. She pulled out her card with shaking hands. My boss rang her up at full price, added a line item for the salad she'd eaten before the performance, and printed the receipt as big as a banner. When she scurried out, the dining room exhaled, and a woman in a booth raised her glass toward the kitchen. "To hairnets and receipts," she said. The menu slideshow came back on. The next slide read, "Be kind." The room already was. Story 12. If you've never ridden in a quiet car, it's like church with better scenery. Signs everywhere. No loud conversations. No speakerphone. We'd barely cleared the city when a guy in a startup hoodie plopped down, spread his elbows, and hit FaceTime on speaker. "Team, I'm on the Acela heading to crush this investor lunch," he boomed, volume set to trade show. He name-dropped their revenue, a customer they hadn't quite landed yet, and a secret pivot. Heads popped up like prairie dogs. A woman two rows up pointed to the sign. He waved her off. "Quiet car is just a suggestion," he said into his mic, and, to the call, "People love to feel important." The conductor appeared, hat brim low, energy calm. "Sir, this is the quiet car," he said. Hoodie guy smiled like he was doing the world a favor. "I'm running a company," he said. "This is time sensitive." The conductor offered a free seat in the next car. 10 steps, he said. "You can talk there." Hoodie guy rolled his eyes and turned his screen so we could all see a grid of faces. "You're all witnesses," he told his team. "This is harassment." The conductor didn't argue. He tapped his radio. The train slid into the next station. We stopped a beat longer than usual. 2 transit police stepped on, not dramatic, just present. One of them pointed to the quiet car placard. "Policy is policy," she said. "You can move now or you can step off." Hoodie guy stood, tried to do a parting shot into his phone, and in doing so nudged his messenger bag. It flopped open. A stack of glossy pitch decks tiled out onto the aisle, each page stamped confidential with the investor's name. People craned. You could feel NDAS blushing. One of the officers crouched, gathered the papers, and handed them back. "Might want to protect your secrets," she said, friendly but surgical. He finally shuffled to the vestibule. The car breathed. The woman 2 rows up, a grandmotherly type with knitting needles, leaned toward me and whispered, "He just pivoted to the platform." The conductor returned 5 minutes later, and without making a speech, set a small white card on Hoodie Guy's vacated seat. "Quiet car courtesy violation. Relocation required. No fine. Just the world's tidiest scarlet letter." At the next stop, we saw him through the window, red-faced, arguing into his phone on the platform as the doors slid shut in total, delicious silence. The whole car smiled like we'd shared a private joke that was printed on a sign the whole time. Story 13. At our quarterly town hall, the CEO likes to do open mic to prove we're transparent. It's theater, but the cookies are good. During Q&A, Miguel, who works nights on facilities, stepped up and asked if leadership would stop zip-tying emergency exit bars during VIP tours so the doors don't alarm. He said it kindly. The CEO laughed into the wireless microphone. "We can't spook clients with loud buzzers," he said, earning a few nervous chuckles. "Let's keep priorities straight." He pivoted back to a slide about safety culture, and as if summoned by the gods of irony, a sprinkler head above the stage coughed and misted. Not a full shower, just a cough, enough to dot the CEO's lapel with 4 perfect polka dots. The room tittered. He glared at AV. The EHS manager, orange vest, always invisible until he isn't, walked to the stage, looked up and frowned. The sprinkler had a plastic dust cap still on it. Those are removed after install. Ours wasn't. Also, a banner we'd hung for the event had been zip-tied directly to the pipe. The EHS manager lifted the banner with 2 fingers, like a surgeon moving gauze. "Who installed this?" he asked. The marketing lead, in the front row, badge like a chandelier, raised a hand. "We just needed it neat for photos." EHS nodded, dialed his radio, and asked security to please unlock all exit bars now. Over the PA in the hallway, we heard, "Copy." The CEO tried to retake the narrative. "Anyway, safety is everyone's responsibility," he said. Miguel coughed into his fist, and the mic picked it up beautifully. Someone in AV, to their eternal credit, switched the big LED wall from the slide deck to the live feed from the south exit. On screen, A contractor climbing a short ladder, snipping a zip tie from the panic bar we'd temporarily secured. The red alarm-armed light blinked to green. The room clapped without quite meaning to. The CEO smiled too broadly. "See? We fix things fast," he said. The EHS manager took the mic, actually took it, and said evenly, "We also will be issuing a stop work on banner installs until marketing completes safety training." He turned to Miguel. "Thanks for flagging it." Then, because the universe has a sense of humor, the catering team opened the doors to wheel in cookies, and the freshly unlocked crash bars pushed wide with a squeal that echoed like a moral. Afterwards, in the hallway, people were joking about sprinkler diplomacy. But the best part was watching Miguel walk back to his shift with half the executive team thanking him by name. Instant karma didn't soak the CEO. It just put a spotlight on the person we should have been listening to all along. Story 14. Our grocery store has a 10 items or less express lane that keeps civilization from melting. Tuesday at rush hour, a guy in a Bluetooth earpiece rolls up with a heaving cart and parks it in the express like a semi across a bike lane. The cashier, a college kid with a lanyard full of pins, says gently, "Sir, this is express." The guy doesn't look up. "I'm in a hurry," he says, then raises his voice for his call. "Yes, I'm at Whole Foods. People here are so slow." The line groans, but holds. The cashier tries again. "We can open lane 3 for you." The guy waves him off and starts unloading a mountain of tiny things that need individual scanning. Yogurts, bars, vitamins that beep like smoke alarms. He smirks at the woman behind him with two items. "I'll be quick," he lies. Then the manager appears. Older woman. Cardigan. Name tag that says she's been here since dial-up. She taps the register and, I swear, toggles some corporate wizardry. The screen blinks. Training mode. Every scan now requires on-screen confirmation, box checking, and a manual price lookup. Beep. Pause. Confirm. Beep. Pause. Confirm. The guy shifts, impatient. "Can you speed it up?" he asks, still on his call. The manager smiles. "Absolutely," she says, and looks at the couple items in the next basket. "Ma'am, sir, right this way." She flips the light on lane 3 and personally checks out the next 3 customers at a speed that would shame NASCAR, while our express hero continues to watch his single protein bar beep like it's being cleared by TSA. He tries to bolt. "Forget it," he says, abandoning the cart. The manager is ready. "Store policy requires we return perishables," she says, "and I need you to either complete the transaction or leave the lane clear." He huffs, calls everyone incompetent, and wheels the cart into the full-service line where it belongs. As he goes, a woman from produce arrives with a bright orange sign and sticks it to the express register right in front of him. "Thanks for using express correctly. 10 items or less." Applause ripples down the line like a breeze, not mocking, just relief again. As I'm paying, the cashier leans over and whispers, "Training mode doesn't do anything different," he winks. "But the beep slows down if you tell it to." Story 15. Our city does a charity 5K that's family-friendly and gloriously chaotic. Toddlers in capes, dads pushing strollers, a dog in sunglasses. I volunteer at the finish, handing out medals and untangling timing chips. There's always one guy who treats it like the Olympic trials. This year he showed up in a compression suit and a scowl, elbowed to the front at the start, and told a 7-year-old in a cape, "Don't trip me, okay?" He false-started, took off before the horn, and shouted, "Learn race etiquette!" Halfway through, we heard the murmur. He'd cut the course at the turnaround cone, skipping the little loop by the lake. The course marshal radioed it in, annoyed but calm. At the finish, he sprinted down the chute like he'd just broken a world record, arms wide, yelling, "First!" The announcer, who is both a saint and petty in the way only saints can be, took his bib and smiled. "Big day," she said into the mic. "Let's check the mats. Our timing system has 2 mats, one at the turnaround, one at the finish." His split for the turnaround was non-existent. The announcer pressed a button and our Jumbotron, the borrowed screen from high school football, flashed live standings. Next to his name, DQ missed split. The crowd didn't boo. They just made that collective oof sound you hear when a cartoon slips on a rake. He protested loudly. Your mats are broken, he said, grabbing at his shoe like the chip might have feelings. The marshal who'd seen him cut jogged up, pointed at the GoPro she wears for disputes, and raised a single eyebrow. He deflated like a bad bouncy castle. Right then, the 7-year-old in the cape barreled down the chute, cheeks red, mother panting behind. The announcer lit up. Actual first finisher for the fun run, she called. With all splits recorded, the kid got the tape and a medal the size of a dinner plate. The compression suit guy stood there holding nothing. He tried to slink away, but the charity director intercepted him with two options. Turn in your bib for a did not finish, and keep your t-shirt, or keep arguing, and we'll refund your fee and ask you to leave. He took the DNF. As he walked off, a golden retriever wearing a bandana trotted past with its own medal, right at tail height. The crowd cheered for the dog like it had cured something. And maybe it had. Specifically, whatever makes people think public space is their mirror. Story 16. Theme park. Saturday. Heat shimmering off the pavement, and the new coaster snaking over the midway like a dare. The queue sign said 90 minutes. We were all spiritually prepared to move 3 feet a minute with dignity when a guy in mirrored shades and a neon fast pass or famine tank walked straight up the exit ramp with 3 friends. He lifted the chain at the merge point like it was a velvet rope with his name on it. We spent real money, he announced to no one and everyone. A teenager in front of me, sunburn and scrunchy, said, Dude, that's not the fast pass line. He smirked. Watch and learn. The ride operator in the booth pressed the mic. Hey folks, reminder, fast pass wristbands are green today, she said. Neon Tank looked down at his blue day band, then back up like reality was negotiable. He tried to shoulder through anyway. The operator didn't raise her voice. She tapped a light. A supervisor in a yellow polo, sun hat, clipboard, appeared with a customer service smile that could slice marble. Wristbands, please. Neon made a show of patting imaginary pockets. Phone died, he said. System lost my reservation. The supervisor scanned his band with a wand. The screen flashed red and then, to the entire queue's delight, chimed loudly. The yellow polo gestured to a sign posted right at the merge. Line cutting equals immediate removal to end of queue. She flipped her radio. Escort to back, she said, like calling a ride sequence. A 6-foot chipmunk mascot trundled up, big foam head, permanent grin, and with pantomime politeness, ushered Neon and friends out of the lane. People started clapping in that relieved church picnic way. Neon tried a last word. I paid for priority. The supervisor stepped aside so everyone could see the posted policy. You paid for admission, she said gently. Priority is for people who actually bought it. She looked at the scrunchy teen and her brother. You two, come on up, she said, waving them through as guest courtesy. The booth operator hit the PA again, cheerful. Surprise upgrade for good sports. As Neon shuffled by us toward the back, past 90 minutes of eye contact, the chipmunk did an exaggerated wrist check and pointed to the blue band, then to the green kiosk 10 feet away. Neon huffed. His friend muttered, We could have just queued. The train dispatched with the teen and her brother in row 1, hands up. The rest of us moved forward 3 feet, smiling like we'd been paid in petty justice. Story 17. At the museum's big Renaissance show, a man in a linen blazer planted himself in front of a Botticelli and started conducting strangers like he'd been hired to narrate the audio guide. You can tell it's a studio work, he announced, pointing at brushwork with a bare finger inches from paint, older than the printing press. A security guard murmured, Please don't point so close. And Lennon shrugged him off. Relax, I have a degree, he said. Then, like the universe had been waiting for a cue, he touched the canvas to show texture. A siren didn't scream. It chirped, small and sharp, but in a gallery that quiet it might as well have been a cannon. Red light bloomed above the frame. The air went still. 2 guards materialized from the corners like chess pieces and guided Lennon back with palms that never quite touched. A conservator in a lab coat appeared with the speed of a rumor, flashlight, and cotton swabs in a pouch. She didn't scold. She examined the tiny crescent his finger had left in the grime layer and asked the guard to log the time. Lennon started insisting he hadn't pressed, as if oil paint keeps a diary of intent. The head of visitor services arrived with a tablet. She pulled up the camera feed. There are cameras everywhere in rooms like that, and showed Lennon his fingertip hovering, then landing. "For your awareness," she said, and her voice was so kind it hurt. "Oils from skin accelerate varnish breakdown," Lennon tried to pivot. "The museum should put the paintings behind glass." The conservator smiled with all her teeth. "We would, if everyone treated don't touch as optional." Visitor services issued what sounded like a parking ticket but felt bigger. A formal incident record and a 90-day ban. Lennon sputtered about donations. The woman beside me, holding the audio guide that had been narrating quietly the whole time, turned up the volume by one notch. The track described how the painting had survived 5 centuries of humidity, war, neglect, and restoration. It had met popes and thieves. It had never met Lennon's finger until today. As the guards escorted him out, a little boy in a dinosaur t-shirt asked the conservator if the painting was hurt. She crouched to his level. "It's okay," she said. "But we're going to give it a little spa day." The boy nodded solemnly. People drifted closer to read the placard like words could be armor. Lennon disappeared through the doorway, and the gallery exhaled the way a church does after a dropped hymnal. The "Please don't touch" signs didn't look bossy anymore. They looked like love letters. Story 18. It had just rained the way city storms do, quick, hard, and personal, leaving a lake at the curb by the busiest crosswalk downtown. The walk sign blinked white. A crowd stepped off, suits, strollers, a courier balancing a pizza bag like a tray. That's when a lifted pickup rolled up to the line and revved like it was auditioning for Thunder. The driver saw the puddle, saw the people, grinned, and gunned it. The sheet of water he threw over the crosswalk was cinematic. A kid squealed. A woman's blouse went translucent. The pizza guy muttered something you can't print. Then the lights behind us bloomed red and blue. A motorcycle cop had been 2 cars back, rain beating on his visor. He rolled forward, pointed, and the pickup obediently pulled into the bus zone. A bus zone marked with big white letters and a sign reading, "Tow Away." The officer didn't dismount at first. He tapped his dash cam, then turned his bike so everyone, driver included, could see the reflection in the shop window. The splash, the faces, the plate. He clicked his mic. "Driver, engine off." The driver tried the classic shrug and smile through the window. The officer stayed neutral. Unsafe acceleration through a crosswalk, splashing pedestrians, stopping in a bus zone, he said, voice even. "License? Registration." The pizza courier set his bag on a newspaper box and, with the patience of a saint, wrung out the corner of his shirt. He caught my eye and grinned. "Dinner and a show." A transit supervisor arrived, high-vis vest, clipboard that means business, and radioed a bus already turning the corner. "Hold 1 minute, obstruction clearing." The officer wrote the ticket in plain view, then, icing on the cake, handed the driver a brochure about pedestrian safety that looked like it had been designed by kindergarten teachers. "You also owe an apology," he said, and gestured toward the crosswalk like a maitre d' indicating a reserved table. The driver, 27 going on 15, stepped out, cheeks red. He muttered something apology adjacent to the soaked woman, who nodded once, clipped. The pizza guy raised a hand. "And the pie?" he said, half-joking. The officer deadpanned. "If it's cold because of this incident, we can add it to the report." Laughter rippled. The bus pulled in. The driver moved. The lake at the curb settled back into being water instead of a weapon. As the motorcycle pulled away, the walk sign blinked white again. We stepped off together, a little wetter, a lot lighter. The puddle didn't look like a target anymore. It looked like a mirror.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary, while supplies last. Tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.